And there's one last pillar of our leadership, and that's the example of our values. As Americans, we respect human dignity. It's why we continue to reject offensive stereotypes of Muslims, the vast majority of whom share our commitment to peace. That's why we defend free speech and condemn the persecution of women or religious minorities or people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. We do these things not only because they are the right thing to do, but because ultimately they will make us safer. Together.
Radio.
We have audio, no video.
Radio Free Vida.
This is a pirate transmission from District 13 with a message.
Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
To the voice of the American Redoubt. This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. I am John Jacob Schmidt, your host, and I want to welcome all of you to the show. For those of you who are tuned in Sunday evening live and not sitting back reading or twiddling your thumbs waiting for Radio Free Redoubt to start in about an hour because you didn't turn your clocks forward, back. Yes. It is daylight savings time in most of the country, and I have to salute Codename Polly 01 for finding a video that has, it is the best, absolutely best done, presentation, explaining or demonstrating how most of us feel about daylight savings time. It was just awesome. It looked like a movie trailer. It was set up like a movie trailer, but the whole thing was about time change, daylight savings time, time change twice a year, and what that does to us as a culture, as a people. I would love to see it go away, but except for one day a year. Today, because you have an extra hour. It's pretty great, huh? And it's always welcome on a Monday morning after time changes also for the first couple mornings. It's great. All right. We have some things that we're going to get into tonight that are going to address, Christian patriots, this refugee city and helping everybody out who wants to stroll into our country and fundamentally transform it. What are we supposed to do about it? Christians, patriots, we're supposed to help everyone out, right? Of course, we don't get to be part of defining what help out somebody means, but we're going to talk about that tonight along with several other things. But first, we're not going to do that without getting into the news and commentary. News commentary is brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series about the collapse and the rebuilding, both in paperback and audiobook out now. All 10 of those. Great stuff. Now, let's go. We're going to focus a little bit overseas for the most of tonight's news and commentary. The UN is planning a court for climate justice. Speaking of eliminating borders or sovereignty, at the upcoming United Nations Climate Summit in Paris, participating nations have prepared a treaty. Of course, you're going to have to follow it because it's a treaty that would create an international tribunal of climate justice, giving third world countries the power to haul the U.S. into a global court with enforcement powers. Congress would be bypassed, left out in the cold by this climate deal, critics say. Policies once left to sovereign nations could be turned over to a U.N. body if the U.S. and its allies approve the proposed deal in Paris during the summit that's scheduled for November 30th through December 11th, coming up here in about a month. According to the proposal, the proposed draft text of the climate treaty, the tribunal would take up issues such as, I love these, climate justice, climate finance. That means how they're going to tax you for your carbon footprint so that they can fund climate justice. And of course, technology transfers and climate debt. Climate debt. I cannot wait to see that defined. The UN held a preparatory conference in September in Bonn, Germany, which is now Bonnistan, Germany, that drafted language to be approved at the upcoming Paris Climate Summit. The Paris conference is mandated, coming up here in November and December. They're mandated to adopt a protocol, another legal instrument, or an agreed outcome with legal force under the convention applicable to all parties. Well, this is great. And Putin comes out and says global warming is a fraud. He's the only world leader speaking the truth. Putin for president. Remember when I said the solution is not in Washington, D.C.? Everybody's like, oh, yeah, we're going to get Paul Ryan in there now. We're going to really make some true changes. He's going in there. I'm in a clean house. We're not really sure what that means. Rumors of ozone air filters for all the offices. It's got to be something green. I don't know, but we'll see. The solution for the problems in America are not going to be found in Washington, D.C., period. Because what do they do? Right off the bat, this week, U.S. President Barack Obama, early Friday, won congressional passage of legislation that lifted the threat of a default on government debt all the way through to the end of his presidency. This debt bill that they passed, they raised the debt limit. The Senate voted 64 to 35 to approve the measure, which was negotiated over the past few weeks by the White House and congressional leaders. And Obama's going to sign the bill into law as soon as he gets it. Without action by Congress, the Treasury Department would have exhausted the last of its borrowing capacity. So basically, we gave him another credit card. Just keep racking it up. It doesn't matter. The solution is not Washington. The problem is Washington and the leftist anti-Americans who have seized power there. And under Obama, the debt's tripled to $20 trillion. Doubled under Obama to $20 trillion. I talked about this yesterday. The Islamic invasion pulls the trigger on Europeans as they scramble for guns. Austria, you cannot buy it. They're the only country left where you can still, well, they have about the least stringent rules on firearms ownership, but you can't get a shotgun or a rifle now. They are gone, flying off the shelves. And the number one buyer is women. And of course, those that are looking down their noses at Austrian citizens who can buy guns are saying, well, you're just doing this out of fear. Well, they have a lot to fear because they're being invaded by Muslims. They have the Islamic threat swearing that they're going to dominate Europe and they're going to rule over them and Islam will prevail. And your blonde-haired women are fair game. Yeah, they have something to fear. No, they could be above all that and above the fear. Like the police officers that responded to Charlie Hebdo. Those were real men. They didn't even have guns with them. Because, I mean, look, that is one fearless cop to show up to a shooting rampage who doesn't even need a gun. Well, because guns are for savages anyway, right? So, yeah, go, Austrians. You know, Glock is right there in Austria. They're Austrian weapons. What? They should issue a Glock. You want to talk about, there's something to put in your federal government budget. Arm every adult citizen, every law-abiding citizen, give them a Glock. I think it's a great idea. What else we got here? You know, Fred Thompson passed away. Fred Thompson, a former U.S. senator from Tennessee, GOP presidential candidate and Watergate attorney and actor who starred on the television drama Law and Order, died today in Nashville. He was 73. Sad. I really liked him. All right, Fox 519 with the news, or with the eye on the economy. And then we'll be back in just a minute to talk about some Patriot activity pushing back against the God-hating agenda in Washington State. More on that when we come back. Stay right there.
Well, just in time for Halloween, Congress passes a budget deal that takes money from the well-living and gives it to the fake and the dying. Hello, everyone. This is Fox 519 here, giving you the news that matters to your pocketbook as patriots and preppers. This is a very special budget edition breakdown of Eye in the Economy, brought to you by Radio Free Redoubt.
In the days of Noah, Book 3, Perdition, a global empire arises like a phoenix from the ashes of the world that was. The emerging order is unified by a new global currency and a single world religion, which are mandated by an imposed UN treaty. In the interest of unity and peace, a zero-tolerance policy for dissenters is enacted and strictly enforced. Hunted down like common criminals for daring to resist the state, Noah Parker's group will have to rely on faith and wits to endure the powers of darkness which are quickly consuming the earth. Buy your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 3, Perdition, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.
Well, welcome back, and a very special thank you to our sponsor, Mark Goodwin of the PrepperRecon.com podcast. I want to say with the holidays coming, now would be a great time to purchase that special gift for the prepper in your life. Mark has some great books and gear that'll bring the smile to the face of the most hardened of preppers. Remember that this business during your holiday season, PrepperRecon.com. Boo! Did I scare you? No, I didn't. Well, then the budget deal should. Well, yes, yesterday was the horrible holiday of Halloween, and guess what happened on Capitol Hill? They decided that zombies were more important than the future, and even though our future will be full of people who are missing their psychotropic drugs when the bottom falls out. What the heck am I talking about? Well, the new budget deal, of course. It's a hot mess, and it's only a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. Passed on the 28th, the budget, at its core, takes monies from the Social Security Fund and funnels them into the ever-growing budget of what I call the Faker Disability Fund, meaning that, yes, the funds that you and I have been paying into Social Security most of our working life are going to pay for the 48% plus of Americans who have decided that because their back hurts in the morning, that they need the rest of us paying their living expenses for the rest of their lives. This budget deal is a terrible plan built by terrible leadership. Here's another awful factor in the budget. It raises the debt limit by $1.5 trillion. So we go from $18.1 trillion debt limit to $19.5 trillion in debt. So the question is, why is this new budget any worse than any one of the old ones? Well, now that the SSDI, or the Disability Program, is broken and insolvent, it recently registered its sixth annual net deficit in 2014, meaning it declined by $30.2 billion since 2013. Meaning that each dollar awarded to its budget was only paired with 77 cents in payroll tax contributions. Now, keeping that fund solvent would require either cutting benefits by 20%, which we know they'll never do, or increasing taxes by 17%. Well, I can see them doing that, too. But the problem is worse. The $30.2 billion deficit comes despite the series of interest payments into the fund from previous loans issued to prop up other programs and payments which come out of general revenues. So they've taken on more debt to support more debt. Makes sense, doesn't it? The deficit has caused these payments and have added up to $213 billion over the past decade. So basically, they're in the red and will be in the red forever. The reason for the lack in sustainability is a drastic increase in the number of individuals on disability. While workers are healthier and jobs are safer these days, the percentage of working-age population, that's 16 and older, on disability has increased from 2.3 to 5.1% over the past 15 years. But right now, that factor stands at about 48% of all Americans are on some type of disability program. This increase comes as a response to ridiculous incentives instituted by Congress in 1978 on, which added non-medical vocational factors such as age, education, and the ability to speak English to the list of disability qualifications. So in essence, you can speak English and have passed the third grade and you have a backache, you're a shoo-in. Currently, about 43% of disability awards are based on these factors, and in the 1980s, Congress loosened the standards even further, causing the higher portion of disability awards to be based on difficult-to-verify claims, such as depression and muscular skeletal pain. Heck, it makes my back hurt even thinking about it. Maybe I can qualify. Now, in order to keep this fund afloat, Democrats have advocated reallocating a portion of the payroll taxes from the Old Age Survivor Insurance, or the OASI, the more well-known Social Security program, now into the Disability Fund. This sounds like closeted socialism. This raid will cause Social Security to run dry even sooner. And this budget act embraces that policy, using Social Security to bail out the Disability Fund for the next 6 years. 6 years. Now let's do some math, everyone. Do we remember when Social Security was supposed to become insolvent? Yes, 2020. That's right. Good recollection. So, in 2020, it was supposed to become insolvent and not be able to pay out any benefits. And now that timetable is going to move up rapidly. We have big, big problems. We just robbed Peter to pay Paul in a huge way that is going to cost us everything. And this budget only gets us to March of 2017. So, what are they going to raid next to pay the bills? Well, Fox 519's assessment, they're going to go after your 401ks and your pension plans. The next thing you know, they will nationalize those plans, offering government funds that will accrue interest, and you will never see a single red cent of it. Now, if you haven't been planning to get out of the system, get out now. Social Security will never be there for you. Gold, silver, lead, and dirt are the things you need to be investing in right at this exact moment. Well, thanks again for listening for my breakdown of the budget this week. And for Eye on the Economy, a Radio Free Readout, this is Fox 519 signing off. God bless.
This is segment two. Thank you, Fox 519. Segment two is brought to you by Katie Armour. Don't forget to use your coupon code JohnJacob for your discount. And they've also got the Soft Armour. Of course, you can buy some really cool Katie Armour t-shirts. But that's just if you want to put – well, they just look cool. But yeah, it'd help promote the business too. But not – before buying your body armor, front, back, and sides, level 3, Patriots, you never know. That's an insurance policy. You'll probably never need it. But if you do, well, there's not much of a substitute. So, katiearmor.com, check them out. Recently relocated, new American Redoubt-based business. Don't forget, you can email me at johnjacob@radiofreeredoubt.com. Thank you guys for your prayers, for your suggestions and ideas, and your support, your encouragement. Much appreciated. If you're listening on the go, radiofreeredoubt.com is the website, and our disaster grid down Patriot Prepper Communications network is over at Amron.com, A-M-R-R-O-N.com. That stands for the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network. It's a nationwide network with over 2,500 members now. Who are standing by to communicate and keep like-minded patriots connected and communicating in a grid-down situation. Great. Great network and some great, great folks. It is a privilege to work with all of you on a regular basis on the nets and off to the side. What else we got here? Now, what I was telling you about before we went into the break, you guys know about this coach, Coach Kennedy. He prayed out on the 50-yard line to pray over the safety of the players on both teams, prayed for their safe return. This was after the game. Lord, thank you for keeping your hand over us, keeping your hand on the kids, keep them safe on their way home. We just, pray for, good sportsmanship and this game, this competition, blah, 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 blah. Well, several folks said, I am going to go join him. Several kids, students, and football players started going out to join him on the 50-yard line. After a few games of doing this, the school administration, someone complained that the coach was doing this. Someone complained. Yet one convicted, self-loathing person who is running from God is reminded of God when they see this coach on his knees and is infuriated to see that he's gaining support from the community as he's joined by football players, parents, other coaches, staff, citizens alike to join him in prayer. So this person complained, and so the school district was all too happy to put the brakes on this little proselytization, little jihad this coach was on, forcing his religion on other people. So they said in a letter, you're going to stop doing this. Now we believe in, freedom of First Amendment rights. So you can pray, and we'll even give you this little place over here in the closet next to the locker room. I don't know. It was someplace off to the side, hidden. They said, so you can continue to pray, but not in view of the children. Isn't this amazing? These schools in these liberal infested areas will bring in homosexual activists to talk to the kids during an assembly about their struggles with hate and trying to fit into society and all this other garbage. They'll bring a sexual deviant into their schools in full view of all the children, but they will take a coach who is on a knee praying, giving thanks to God, and he has to go into the closet and hide out of view of the children. We're in trouble. Well, there's a lot of patriots that are saying, you know what, this is not going to happen. We are going to stand. In fact, there were two patriot legislators who went out there and supported that coach, Jesse Young and Graham Hunt, representatives, Washington State, conservative Christian patriots in occupied territory where you could never get elected. Well, they did. And they are standing by this coach. I know at least Representative Jesse Young talked to him. He went out there and prayed with that coach, set the example. It was great. Well, Representative Matt Shea noted the articles, Article 1, Section 11, Article 26, which outline the violations that the school is in by putting this burden of religious restriction, religious tyranny over a Christian coach who wished to pray. And several folks, the letters that rolled in. I'm so proud. I'm so proud of the citizens. I know many of us in the Patriot community put it out on our Facebook pages, and I emailed this out to, Washington, AMRON members, and we really worked to get that out there to make it go viral. And the letters, they're burning the phone right off the desk and melting the phone system down, their emails, all of it. They're just flooding in with people that are articulating their sentiments to this school district for this violation of the most fundamental right to worship God. Amazing. I want to read to you one letter. This says, this is from a veteran. Dear Mr. Lievel, this was Representative Matt Shea put out the contact information, the phone number. And if you guys want this, well, maybe we'll post this. The phone number is area code 360-473-1006. The name of this administrator is Aaron Lievel, and the email address is A-A-R-O-N, Aaron with two A's, A-A-R-O-N dot Lievel, I spell L-E-A-V-E-L-L, Lievel, at BremertonSchools.org. I spell B-R-E-M-E-R-T-O-N schools.org. BremertonSchools.org. Now you can go back and replay that if you need to, and we'll post that in the highlights and resources posting. Keep the pressure on these people. Representative Matt Shea writes, for my fellow Christians, stand up now, join us now. The time for choosing is at hand. Will you stand to fight the persecution, defend the faith, and defend our fellow brothers and sisters in Christ? Or will you learn how to live in Babylon? I don't want to live in captivity. I want to live in freedom. More action items to follow. In freedom, Representative Matt Shea. And then he actually outlined the laws that they are violating, the law of the land, the Constitution, Article 1, Section 11, and Article 26. And that is from the state constitution. Somebody sent me, when I shot this out, I don't know who this was. I didn't even want to know. Somebody responded to this email, this plea for people to stand up for this coach. Somebody emailed me back and says, works both ways. Would you give the same support to a Muslim rolling out his prayer rug and bowing and praying? I think not. Well, my response is absolutely heck no, not. Of course not. Why would I support a Muslim going out on the 50-yard line, a Muslim who Islam is part of a system whose followers have vowed to destroy America and Americanism and Christianity. They have every intent of conquering us. They boast about it. They don't even hold back. So why would I support something like that out on the 50-yard line in front of our children? That's pretty much a no-brainer. It doesn't go two ways. Because Christianity is American. Islam is not. Islam is antithetical to all that is American. It stands in defiance against Americanism and our heritage and the Constitution. It's not compatible. Works both ways. No, it doesn't. Look, when an unstoppable object collides with an unmovable object, something's going to break. All right? You can't have Islam and Christianity holding hands and living together in unity in America. One's going to give. One has to give. So, of course it doesn't work both ways. That's just ridiculous. All right, here's a letter from a veteran. Dear Mr. Lievel, I am a military veteran who honorably served her country. and took an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That same Constitution was written by better men than you, and in their wisdom, they wrote in the right for religious freedom for all Americans. You, sir, have just trampled on that right for Coach Kennedy and discriminated against him for practicing that right. I served my country. My father served. My ancestors served as far back as the Revolutionary War, and many died to have those rights. You have no honor, no common sense, and no right to fire a man because he prays in public. Resign, step aside, and allow someone with character and a real respect for the meaning of religious freedom to fill your job. United States Navy retired. Way to go. Oh, well, hopefully the pressure will be on. They suspended that coach, by the way. And boy, is there some stuff coming online for that and related to that. Now, before we go into the break, last week I talked about this book, Confrontational Politics. And I also mentioned another resource, and I want to encourage you to go back and listen to yesterday's broadcast on ACN, the American Christian Network, and KTW. It's our terrestrial broadcast, you know, over commercial radio, AM and FM. Out of Spokane and Wenatchee and Tri-Cities, Yakima, all over the place in the American Redoubt. We had Representative Heather Scott on yesterday, and I had the privilege of being able to interview her to talk about the speech that she gives is titled The Power of the Engaged Citizen. This is powerful for you patriots who are saying, what can I do? What action can I? Because we keep saying you need to get involved. You need to get engaged. Well, how? Go vote? No, that's just a fraction of it. It's a sliver of it, of what's required of us as patriots. Voting is, that's just like saying eating the cake is part of cooking. There's so much to do before you get to eat the cake, before you get to vote. Right? You got to make sure you got all the right ingredients. You got to knead it. You got to work it. You got to do these certain steps so that when it's all done, you can enjoy the fruits of your labor. You get to eat it. That's, you get to vote, right? Okay, so you've got to a lot of work before you get to enjoy eating the cake. All right. And she talks about how to do that. She talks about what actions you can take, and it's work. It's not as much fun as eating the cake, but if you want the results you're hoping for, it requires work ahead of time, behind the scenes. You need to educate yourself. And one of the resources, two resources I'm going to point you to. One is her website, and get on her email list, no matter where you are in the country, in Canada. There's some great resources for folks, Americans, patriots, Canadians, wherever you happen to be listening. RepHeatherScott.com. That's R-E-P, Heather, H-E-A-T-H-E-R, Scott, with two T's, .com. And get on her email list, because they do a lot of stuff about getting engaged and involved in the community, and hopefully you can learn some lessons. She's very, very proactive and engaged with her constituents. Now, the main resources that she builds this Power of the Engaged Citizen speech on, and how she works with her people, is a educational program in a series of online through a great organization called Center for Self-Governance. And their website is the same, centerforselfgovernance.com, www.centerforselfgovernance.com. We'll get that also added to the highlights and resources posting. That was really good, though. Go back and listen to that interview if you get a chance, and hopefully you'll be able to enjoy that. Now, right before we go into the break, I want to remind you, if you're in the area, Chris Ann Hall will be speaking up in Medellin Falls, Washington, way north by the Idaho-Washington border. But I mean, if this within an hour and a half, 2 hour drive, it's worth it. If you've not been in front of Chris Hann Hall before, we've got stuff going on, starting at 1 p.m. All the way until, well, the evening at 6:30 p.m. They will be, Chris Hann Hall will be getting into her Constitution presentation. Lots of activities going on all day. We'll get all the details up on our calendar. Hopefully that's operational by now. I got to double check. If it's not, we'll just put up a posting on the website with all the details, the times, the directions, address, all that stuff. And Representative Matt Shea will be up there, and so will Ponderay County Commissioner Karen Skoog, both solid patriots. And I think they'll each be speaking, as well as Chris Hann Hall. I will not be speaking. I am going to just kick back and soak it all up and be an observer. All right, segment three coming up in just a minute, so stay right there. This is the voice of the American Redoubt.
Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. Drudge Report today announced that on the evening of June 24th, ABC News would, quote, have anchor Charlie Gibson deliver world news from the Blue Room of the White House. Ladies and gentlemen, the White House. The report went on that ABC plans a primetime special, Prescription for America, originating from the East Room, excluding opposing voices on the debate over socialized medicine. In recent years, many have raised concerns over the objectivity of the major media. Indeed, the presidential election of 2008, with its lack of transparency and hard questions of certain candidates, reinforced those concerns. But to have a major news organization broadcast from inside the White House with the objective of promoting socialized medicine without debate is proof positive that at least one major media outlet is no longer free. Thomas Jefferson opined on the subject to John Tyler in 1804, quote, "Our first object should therefore be to leave open to him all the avenues to truth. The most effectual hitherto found is the freedom of press. It is, therefore, the first shut up by those who fear the investigation of their actions." In this case, the press has not been shut up, but co-opted. This development is eerily similar to Pravda, the official news source in the former Soviet Union. Pravda means truth in Russian, but as the Russian people quickly learned, it never was. It was simply another branch of government promoting the agenda of the powers that be. Combined with the other attempts to massively expand our government, this development should raise the eyebrows of every American. I predict this will hasten the shift of more and more Americans away from major media to internet news sources. But this begs the question, will the government co-opt or control that next? Based on what we are already witnessing, this may come sooner than we think. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening.
One podcast dares to be different.
This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. I am John Jacob Schmidt, and so are you. My name is your name, too, if you're a God-fearing, liberty-minded patriot. And some other liberty-minded patriots, Selkirk Mountain Real Estate, are sponsoring segment three. Learn more about relocating to the northern part of the panhandle of Idaho. If you are strategically relocating, give them a call, SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. All right. There's some things that we need to address as Christians because we've got a little bit of confusion setting in. So we're going to talk about deceptive persuasion and the deceived pulpit in some cases, and the sheep that they're leading off the cliff. First, Christians, and especially pastors. An invasion, just burn this into, I'm going to make a bumper sticker out of this, or t-shirt, or something. An invasion of your country by a people who have sworn to destroy you is not a ministry opportunity. It is an invasion. Stop embracing it. It is not something you should be clapping your hands over, eagerly willing to aid and participate in. Christian patriots should guard their hearts and minds from this infectious deception and the lies from the godless anti-Americanists who are using the Word of God to confuse and deceive many of our believers and Christian patriots. How do they do it? Let's take sanctuary cities, for example. How should a discerning Christian patriot know when someone is trying to deceive him? Here's a litmus test. When the godless anti-American groups are trying to convince you that going along with their policies is the loving Christian thing to do, and they are jabbing their finger at the Bible, that is something that should be setting off all kinds of red flags in your head. There is a direct correlation between the level of aggression that a city uses to advance an anti-biblical and anti-Christian agenda and policies and their immigration or sanctuary city policies. Wherever you see sanctuary city policies advanced, there are also a couple of shills, pastors, that the city governments dig up from somewhere to help keep the opposition in line, to convince you that going along with this thing that these people are trying to push is the right Christian thing to do, that you should be involved. And what's amazing is they're usually the spokespeople who are helping to champion policies on this sanctuary city issue, knowing full well that everything else that the city council does is a godless agenda on every other front. They're recklessly spending money that they don't have. They're continuously getting their cities further and further in debt. They're pushing a homosexual or otherwise sexual deviant policies under the banner of human rights. And everything else that goes against what we believe. But they're trying to tell you, hey, it's the Bible says. Now, remember, we are a nation built on a heritage and a history where people came to this blessed continent not to take it over and make it a new Scotland or England or Germany or Ireland or a new Italy or Russia or El Salvador, but to become Americans, to embrace American ideals of liberty and religious freedom and justice and protections for the citizens' rights and property. Freedom from tyranny. They understand that America was distinctly different and unique from the country they left. That is why they left it. Not to bring it here and dominate and to overthrow Americanism, to displace our heritage and our values. They didn't integrate their culture into America. They assimilated and became Americans, proud of their roots and their heritage, but held Americanism in higher esteem. And there was a legal process for doing that. It cost something, just like last week with the interview where she came from El Salvador and what it cost them in money, in sacrifice to do the right thing. And at that time, when my grandfather came here, when so many of your parents, grandparents, great-grandparents came here from the old world, it was, Americanism was respected and revered, and our laws were. It was a magnificent, proud day when they raised their hands and called themselves Americans for the first time. But that's not what we're seeing today. Sanctuary cities. It's in the Bible, by golly. So we should embrace it. Did you guys know that sanctuary cities are biblical? They're addressed in the Bible. Did you know that? Well, that is what one of the arguments that the leftists, the godless, are trying to point to the pastors, the shills, in their communities to try to convey to you that this is the right thing to do, to support sanctuary cities, because they're in the Bible. Remember what I said? This is deceptive. Let's go right to the Bible. All right. If you're not religious, just sit tight. Matter of fact, you might want to know this too. In Joshua chapter 20, then the Lord said to Joshua, tell the Israelites to designate the cities of refuge as I instructed you through Moses, so that anyone who kills a person accidentally and unintentionally may flee there and find protection from the avenger of blood. When they flee to one of these cities, they are to stand in the entrance of the city gate and state their case before the elders of that city. Then the elders are to admit the fugitive into their city and provide a place to live among them. If the avenger of blood comes in pursuit, the elders must not surrender the fugitive because the fugitive killed their neighbor unintentionally and without malice aforethought. And even in our laws in America, that's one of the requirements for charging someone with murder. Malice aforethought. They are to stay in that city until they have stood trial before the assembly. So they don't get off scot-free. They still have to stand trial. So they stand trial before the assembly and until the death of the high priest who is serving at that time. Then they may go back to their own home in the town from which they fled. And then it names all these cities that were set aside specifically as cities of refuge. So when they try to say, hey, it's biblical, you call yourself a Christian? Hey, if you don't like the idea of sanctuary cities, then you're not following the Bible. These were set up for somebody who was being accused of killing somebody. Somebody wants eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. They want to kill you because you accidentally chopping wood and your axe head flies off and hits somebody in the head and kills them. All right, now everybody wants a piece of you. Well, you can go to a refuge city if you can make it to the gate without getting caught. If you make it in time, you can plead your case and they will take you in. And then you're still going to give account before the assembly. And everything lines up with what you said. They cannot hand you over to the avengers who want to take your life. That's what it was designed for. It was not designed to bring people who were hostile to your country, your values, your God, your heritage, your laws, to come into your cities so they could rape and kill and then get away with it. It was never intended for that. One of the primary duties of government is to protect its citizens. So we've misused this sanctuary city thing to defend the policies of cities of refuge in America. Because what they're supporting is illegal. It defies the righteous laws of our land. It creates economic drain. It empowers people to not work for their food because many of them are able-bodied people, but they don't contribute to their economy at all. In some places, they do. They work for, well, wages that allow employers to exploit them for extremely low wages, making it more difficult for the Americans that are already here, that are citizens looking for work, who can't raise a family on what they're paying illegal immigrants. Also, you have people that are dividing the communities because they're not assimilating. There's also much higher crime in these areas carried out by illegal aliens. And not to mention the diseases that we've previously eradicated from our country, our culture, are now on the rise. And there's more. Okay, now let's talk about refugees. Is it unchristian to reject this administration's policies and their efforts to bring 200,000 so-called asylum seekers to America? They love using that word. What we're finding, though, is many of these so-called asylum seekers, refugees in this refugee crisis, in Europe, are not even fleeing war zones. They're not even coming from Syria. Many of them are, but they were fighters with ISIS and other rebel groups on jihad, bringing crime and rape, violence, lawlessness with them, like locusts swarming into Europe. So is it heartless to turn them away? Because this is the argument. This is what's coming at us that we have to contend with. And that is those who are making the argument that, well, in Leviticus chapter 19, it says, when a foreigner resides among you in your land, do not mistreat them. The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Well, there's another one. Jesus and his parents fled to Egypt to escape persecution. So they were foreigners. Exodus in the Geneva Bible, Exodus chapter 22 says, moreover, thou shalt not do injury to a stranger, neither oppress him, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. So, if you are a Bible-believing Christian, you should be able to just love everybody who comes into your country, who is a foreigner. But see, never in the Bible is anyone told to embrace invaders, those who were coming there to undermine their nation, to overthrow their nation, and to one day have those people in bondage to the invading force. Never anywhere. There is no example. There is nothing to support this. Here's a great example. When my grandfather moved here from Scotland, he was a Scotsman with a thick accent. And you know what? There were people who didn't want to hire his father, my great-grandfather, because they didn't like his accent, or they're Irish and they don't hire Scotsmen, or whatever it is. And they were mistreating these people sometimes. And the Bible says not to do that. They just became American citizens just like you. You are to treat them as an American citizen, not like some foreigner. Not somebody that needs to be kicked to the curb. That's unchristian-like. But they came here as foreigners. And even if somebody's living here on a visa, and they're here legally, and they're not breaking the laws, the person's working hard, you don't chastise them because they're not an American and treat them badly. That's not the Christian thing to do. You treat them well. You don't mistreat them. It's pretty simple. But see, what we're talking about here, and that's the argument that they try to use to manipulate you to accept this invasion force being forced by a Muslim in the White House who is forcing Muslims to come into our country as a strategic plan to upend our nation and our culture. This is a long-term strategy to destroy America and Americanism. What about all the Christians who are being persecuted and hunted down there and slaughtered? We're not seeing them. They're nowhere to be found. They're huddling in other places, Lebanon and other places. They kick them to the side. Let's bring the Muslims in. This is strategic. This is not something to embrace. This is not a ministry opportunity. This is an invasion. Now, I don't know if you guys have heard of Bridget Gabriel. Bridget Gabriel is a spokeswoman, author, activist who speaks out against Islam. They want to kill her. She's about 50 years old. She was raised in Lebanon, but in a Christian home, Christian family. She has lived through war. They've lived under the rubble of their house with kerosene lanterns. They've had to crawl out to the little stream floating down the side of the road to get water to avoid sniper fire from Muslims. They were rescued by Israeli soldiers who pushed into Lebanon and treated by Israeli medics, those dirty, rotten Jews. She knows firsthand what Islam is all about. She wrote two books called Because They Hate, and she also wrote They Must Be Stopped, two different books. She talks about her experiences living in that type of environment around foreigners that we should take in and embrace. Let's just show them the love, and they'll just want to become a Christian because they'll see how loving we are. Just by throwing our borders open and allowing them all to make sure they got a nice comfy bed, we'll even move out of our... This is like the Bolshevik Revolution, where in what's going on in Germany. If you guys have never read the book, We the Living, I was talking by Ayn Rand. I was talking to a patriot, Christian patriot, last night at this harvest party at a church. And we were talking about books that we've read. And we got talking about We the Living. Were these folks in Russia, when the Bolsheviks were coming and taking over and communism was taking over, they go to work and then they come home. This couple comes home and there's like two other families in their living room with blankets pinned to the ceiling as dividers. And they say, hey, this is our apartment. You can't be in here. And of course, you know, the commissar is like, well, these people need a place to stay. And, if you were a good comrade, you would give them your place. I mean, you are a good comrade, right? Comrade? Because if you're not a good comrade, well, we've got a place for you. Somewhere in Siberia. And this is what's happening in Germany, where these people are being moved out of their homes. There's a village. Oh, so I meant to pull this story up. It's like 107 people in this village, and they're bringing in 750 Muslims into a village with 110, 120 people in this village. That's their whole population. And the government in Germany saying, well, we're bringing these 750 Muslims in. These empty businesses and storefronts and homes, that's where we're putting them. So you need to embrace it and accept it. But I want to share something with you, and this is from an audio file with Bridget Gabriel giving a speech about the intent of Islam and the Muslim Brotherhood. And this is important to you because this, I'm not talking about Germany now. I'm talking about America. I'm talking about the assault, the invasion, the destruction of America that is underway right now, under your noses. Take a listen to this. This is Bridget Gabriel.
I am holding in my hand the Muslim Brotherhood plan for the destruction of the United States, written 5/22/1991. The title of the plan is مذكرة تفسيرية للهدف الاستراتيجي العام للجماعة في أمريكا الشمالية. You all got that? There will be a quiz. It is titled the Muslim Brotherhood, an explanatory memorandum for the general strategic goal for the group, the Muslim Brotherhood in North America, written 5/22/1991. This plan was presented as evidence in the Holy Land Foundation trial, the largest terrorism trial ever in the history of the United States, where our government handed down 108 guilty verdicts for Muslim Americans and Muslim American organizations raising money to support terrorist organizations in the Middle East to the tune of millions. And I'm just going to read you a paragraph of this plan, so it'll give you an idea of what I'm talking about. They talk about the settlement in the United States. Understanding the role of the Muslim Brother in North America. The process of settlement is a civilization jihadist process with all the word means. The Akhwan, which is the Arabic word for brothers, must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hands and the hands of the believers so that it is eliminated and Allah's religion is made victorious over all other religions. Is this clear? They don't mince words, do they? But the most important page of this document is the last page. Because in the last page, they list 29 front Islamic organizations set up in the United States with the specific goal of sabotaging America from within and destroying America by our own hands. And I'm just going to name a few. Number one on the list is ISNA, Islamic Society of North America. And if you're familiar with ISNA, it's because they are now advisors to President Obama about Middle East policy. So we not only have the Fox watching the hen house, we have the Fox inside the White House dictating policy in the ear of the president. Number two on the list is the MSA, the Muslim Student Association. The Muslim Student Association has more chapters on American college campuses than the Democrats and the Republicans combined. Number eight on the list is NAIT, the North American Islamic Trust. The North American Islamic Trust owns the deed to over 90% of American mosques in the United States. That is a problem. Now, what makes this very important, and I'm going to focus in the last 3 minutes, 5 minutes on education, is to show you how they set up every organizations in this plan to destroy America, focusing on every sector of our society. Organizations focused on publishing, organization focused on media, organization focused on education, with the strict purpose of doing sabotage to America from within.
All right, one more. That I want to read to you. You guys remember Heidi Mund? She was the one where in a church, this imam comes in. And they opened up this Lutheran church. I think it was a Lutheran church. Yeah. And she starts proclaiming Christ. She starts reading scriptures and speaking against this imam, praying, doing this Muslim prayer in this Christian church. And this is something that somebody, they posted on our Facebook page, and this is what they wrote. I went to a meeting last night where Heidi Mund was the guest speaker. You may recall that Heidi Mund was the brave German woman who protested against a Muslim imam giving a prayer at a Lutheran church a couple of years ago in Germany. Last night she spoke about Islam and how it is destroying German culture through political correctness and hate crime laws. She also said that Germany as a country is lost. It has been invaded by human locusts and there is no turning back. The German people cannot fight them because they don't have guns. Her message to America is simply, don't let the government disarm you. Many of the descriptions of what is happening in Germany is a carbon copy of what is happening here in America. Heidi went on to say that she is originally from East Germany and she was a former communist, so she knows what communism is. She said that the political and economic pressure she's endured in the last 2 years from the German government, the PC police, is far worse than the hell she lived through under her East German rulers. Isn't that something for context? The German government has their left-wing shills, just like we do. What is happening to their government is a carbon copy of what's happening here. The Muslims, aided by the German government, are using Clawered Piven and Rules for Radicals against the German people, just like our own government is doing to us here. This is jihad on an international scale. Get ready for open warfare here on our soil. Civil war is coming. That's how people are feeling right now about this. Better take this seriously. Better take it seriously. Now, we're going to talk about one country that is standing out above the rest. And why are they different? And this might help you, Christians, with your perspective on where we should stand in this time and season that we're in. We'll be right back. Stay right there.
Hi, everyone. This is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Then let Glenn take you on a wild ride through the collapse, community building, resistance against a corrupt system, and the rebirth of a new one. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
This is Chris Walsh of Revolutionary Realty in North Idaho. We've developed springs, installed solar and wind power, installed root cellars, solar hot water heaters, all documented on our website, free for public use. Our articles are fully documented, full-page photos and drawings detailing each endeavor. Take a look at our off-grid information on our website, www.revrealty.us. Again, that's www.revrealty.us. When you're looking for property in North Idaho, call a revolutionary, 208-667-1776.
We are back with segment four, which is brought to you by Works.com. It is an American Redoubt-owned business that make custom-style Kydex-style holsters, mag pouches, and, well, they've got other gear, too. Their lead time's less than 2 weeks. Remember, this is custom-made gear right here in the American Redoubt. Check them out at WERKZ.com. Great folks, patriots. And there's a lifetime guarantee on all their products. Now, you guys have probably heard about this country, Hungary, which Mrs. Schmidt is all excited about because, oh, to steal a Doc Holliday's term, she's my sweet, soft Hungarian devil. That's her heritage, German and Hungarian mostly. So this is exciting. Hungarian leader rebuked for saying Muslim migrants must be blocked to keep Europe Christian. Now, if you guys don't remember, well, you probably don't remember. If you don't remember reading in your history about the Ottoman Empire and the Muslims overtaking Europe the first time, well, the second, third time? How many times has this been now? It was the Crusades. Everybody is, oh, these Crusades were horrible. They oppressed people. They tried to force Christianity on the Middle East and the, no, revisionist historian victim. Islam was invading and taking over Christian Europe, and they were going to spread Islam by force and dominate and rule. It was the Crusades. It was all these kings who had been squabbling with each other, finally decided to lock swords with each other and make a pact and join together and fought a bloody war to push Islam back. Hungary was right in the middle of that. Okay, let me read this to you. Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban was criticized online and in person on Thursday. This is a couple weeks ago. Oh, this is back in September. For writing a German newspaper that it was important to secure his nation's borders from mainly Muslim migrants to, quote, keep Europe Christian. Oh, it's horrible. Where's the tolerance? What about religious freedom? He says those arriving have been raised in another religion and represent a radically different culture. Most of them are not Christians, but Muslims. Mr. Orban wrote in a commentary for Frankfurt Allgemeine Zeitung, a German newspaper. This is an important question because Europe and European identity is rooted in Christianity. It is not worrying in itself that European Christianity is now barely able to keep Europe Christian? He asked. There is no alternative, and we have no option but to defend our borders. Remember, Hungary is about the only country who has sealed its borders with its military, concertina wire, patrols, and shutting down their borders. He says, I want to underline that for me, Christianity in public and social life means a duty to our brothers in need. Oh, no. Let me back up. This guy, Mr. Tusk from the European Union, he's taking this Hungarian prime minister to task. So he says, I want to underline that for me, Christianity in public and social life means a duty to our brothers in need, as he stood right alongside the Hungarian prime minister. He said, referring to Christianity in a public debate on migration must mean, in the first place, the readiness to show solidarity and sacrifice. For a Christian, it shouldn't matter what race, religion, and nationality the person in need represents. This is the manipulative tools that they're using. If you're really a Christian, it shouldn't matter what race, religion, and nationality somebody is to help somebody in need. And the first thing that we should do as Christians is show solidarity and sacrifice. In other words, you're supposed to sacrifice your values, sacrifice your borders, sacrifice your people to an invading force. These are not people in need. Well, they are. They need to spread Islam at all costs. I'm sorry. I'm not going to help somebody. If you know what? If there is a Muslim beat up on the side of the road and he's laying there bleeding, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pick that guy up and I'm going to take him to a hospital, or I'll take him to the inn and I'll tell the innkeeper, you take care of him, make sure he gets rested up. And at some point, I'm going to try to share the gospel with him. And I'm going to make sure the guy's taken care of. But you know what? If a Muslim comes kicking my door down to hurt me or my family, I'm going to kill him. So remember the context here. We're not dealing with people in need. We're dealing with a military-aged young men force of millions that's overtaking Europe and claiming the women to be theirs as booty, claiming they're going to spread jihad, claiming that they are going to dominate Europe and acting like they already own it. The Hungarians, they're on to this. This is mostly a Christian nation. Well, what do I base that on? So glad you asked. Can't wait to get to it. Mr. Tusk, a former prime minister in Poland, drew attention to his rebuke of the Hungarian leader on social networks, and his office posted videos of his comments on YouTube. Mr. Orban waited till the end of the day to respond to Mr. Tusk. Tusk, Polish. He's ripping on Mr. Orban from Hungary. And he faced reporters alone. When he reiterated the theme of his article that Europe was at risk of being overrun and had to shut its borders. The Hungarian prime minister argued that European countries had no obligation to accept most of the migrants, as the overwhelming majority of people are not refugees because they are not coming from war-stricken areas. Our Christian obligation is not to create illusions, he said. That is a great one. How about that'd be a great bumper sticker? What a great counter argument to everybody just trying to use the Christian argument to deceive us into buying into this sanctuary city, open up our borders wide open and bring in all the Muslims. Our Christian obligation is not to create illusions. But that's what they're doing in Europe. That's because they have a veil of deception over their eyes. He went on to invoke Hungary's historical experience as part of the Ottoman Empire, which ended more than three centuries ago, as an explanation for its current opposition to Muslim migrants. Now, if you guys remember, about 300 years ago, the Ottoman Empire came through Europe sweeping, trying to take to spread Islam. So this is the liberals are going, oh, you're bringing something up that's 300 years old. That's your argument for keeping Muslims out today? That was 300 years ago, you old fool. You know what? He's the only wise one in the picture. Because this is a cycle. And you know what? If you don't know what an ambush looks like, you're going to walk right into it, into the kill zone. And this is an ambush. To step right into that kill zone and accept the situation and say, this must be harmless. Let's go here. Let's do this. He knows better. And so do the Hungarian people. Now, this is what's interesting. All of Europe is bringing in these Muslims, screaming at Hungary for not opening their borders. They're saying this is the Christian thing to do, to open your borders. But all of these countries aren't Christian. Here is another example of the godless telling the godly what they should do based on the Bible. Remember, I brought this up, I don't know, a few months ago. Satan used the Bible, well, not the Bible at the time, the scriptures. Satan used the scriptures to try to make his case to deceive Christ, didn't he? When he tried to tempt Christ, he used scripture. In every step, Satan would go, well, hey, the scripture says. And Christ knew better. He countered him. If you guys don't know the word of God, you're going to get deceived. Because they're using scripture to deceive the people in the church. Sweden, in 1900, 90% of its population went to church in Sweden. Today, only 3% attend church or churchgoers. From 90% to 3%. Now Sweden is the rape capital of the world. They're completely overrun by Islam. They're completely dominated. And they don't know how to get out. And they keep bringing in more. In England, in 1900, 90% of their population attended church. Today, 10%. Now, they're overrun by Islam. There are Sharia courts in all of these countries now, all across Europe, in several of these countries, with more Muslims on the way. I don't have the statistics for Germany. I don't have the statistics for France. But there are now more mosques than there are churches. In fact, they're putting up mosques in buildings that used to be churches. They are invading and they are occupying. But the one country that's not accepting Muslims and has sealed its borders is getting fingers pointed in their faces for being unchristian-like, while they are turning in all of their other policies across the board, are rejecting God, are hostile toward God and toward godly people, toward Christians. But look at this. Hungary has a Christian constitution. Hungary has a new constitution passed by the Hungarian parliament and signed into the Hungarian by the Hungarian president. This constitution took effect January 1st, 2012. That's almost 4 years ago. Only 4 years ago, Hungary had a new constitution and it was a Christian constitution. The constitution was written and passed by the center-right Fidesz party, which currently holds 227 of the 385 seats in the Hungarian parliament. First, the constitution is explicitly Christian. The national credo, which preambles the new constitution, is well worth the read in its two-page entirety. Here are some of the relevant excerpts. We are proud. This is from the Hungarian Constitution. You won't find this in the constitutions of any of the other countries in Europe that are being overran and invaded. Which one is protecting its borders and keeping the Muslims out? The only redoubt in Europe right now is Hungary. And they coincidentally have a Christian constitution. In it, it says, we are proud that our King Saint Stephen established the Hungarian state on firm foundations 1,000 years ago and our country as a part of Christian Europe. We recognize the role of Christianity in preserving our nationhood. This is in their constitution. It doesn't say God. It doesn't say creator. It doesn't say God, nature's God. It says Christianity. Second, the constitution is explicitly nationalistic. Again, from the national credo. that says, "We are proud of our forefathers who struggled for survival, freedom, and independence of our country. We are proud that our people have battled for centuries to protect Europe and have, with their talent and diligence, enriched her common values." That is nationalistic, not globalistic, like the rest of the European nations. It is Christian, not hostile toward God and God's followers, like the rest of the nations in Europe. And who is getting overran? All of the nations in Western Europe except Hungary. You see the supernatural protection? The people are reaping the benefits of their government dedicating their country, their founding document, the law of their land, is firmly planted in their Christianity. So, I believe that they are being supernaturally protected and rewarded. Now, there's people in Hungary that are, "Oh, human rights, we need to embrace all cultures. If we're real Christians, we should open up our borders and help these people in need." But Hungary is also not experiencing the accelerated rate in sexual crimes, pedophilia, violence, and their churches aren't being toppled and replaced with mosques. If I were anywhere in Europe and I wanted to redoubt, I'd be heading for Hungary. Just hope to continue that, the hope that that continues to last. It'd be something to keep in your prayers. Pray over the nation of Hungary to be salt and light in Europe. A beacon of hope for all the other Christians across Europe that are watching their countries be just decimated. Like that one German lady that I mentioned in the last segment. Heidi Mund. Watching her country dissolve right before her eyes. Shattered. She's shattered. In her soul, she's broken, seeing her country being destroyed. It will never be this the same again. The men have been so demasculated. They can't even protect their women without being chastised. There is no chivalry left. In Europe, you open up a door for a woman and you get the stink-eyed look or get chewed out for acting like a woman can't open a door for herself. I mean, it was the kind of created this monster that they're in. Bitten, eaten up by. Wow, huh? Okay, so I hope that helps a little bit of perspective there with where we stand as God-fearing people and in the face of the arguments that we are having fired at us like fiery darts. Even using the Bible to try to convince us to accept this. Look, you need to pray for discernment and you need to pray for wisdom. And use discernment. When something in your gut saying, "I know what they're saying, but it don't seem right. It's just not right. Something's in my gut saying this ain't right." Even though they're saying the Bible says, and I know what they're saying, but something's not right. Listen to that. That's discernment. That's the Holy Spirit. That's you knowing something's not right. No matter how they present the argument to you, you know it's wrong. You've got to protect it. Who knows where we'll be? Who knows where we'll be in 10 years, 20 years? Who knows what type of borders might have to be thrown up to protect a segment in the North American continent from this ongoing invasion. And that will not come without chastisement from the whole world. You've got to know what you believe in, and you've got to have so much resolve. And they're going to call you stubborn and close-minded, and you got to say, "So what? Don't care what you say. My family, my home, my posterity, my heritage, my values and beliefs and everything that I hope and dream to pass to the next generations is going to get snuffed out if I listen to you, the leftist. If I listen to the left, it's all going to be gone. and they won't be able to save you from it. Merkel is not going to be there to save the girls from being raped in across Germany. So, anyway, guys, I'm spent. I'm losing my voice. So, I'm going to do a partisan radio tomorrow. Get that uploaded tomorrow night. I still haven't decided exactly what topics I want to cover for that yet. I've got kind of a menagerie of different piles of options and researches and questions from listeners and stuff like that. So I'm going to go through that later this evening and then tomorrow morning. And then I'll get Partisan Radio Volume 25 for real, Volume 25. Last week I was calling it Volume 25 and it was Volume 24. So now we're on Volume 25, which I'm going to get uploaded tomorrow. So you guys have a blessed week. God bless all of you and keep us in your prayers. Stay the course and be resolved in your minds and in your hearts where you stand on these issues and get ready to dig in. There's a fight coming for all that you know and all that you love and care about, but we're in it together, all of us. So don't forget that you're not alone. Even though it feels like it sometimes. All right. This is the voice of the American Redoubt. I am John Jacob Schmidt. My name is your name too. Good night.